You're listening to Health Styles on WBAI 99.5 FM New York City and at WBAI.org online. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of Health Styles, that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com, centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Well, did you ever leave a hospital or an encounter with a nurse or a physician and have no idea what you should be doing to care for yourself, even though you've been handed written instructions that may or may not be readable? Unfortunately, this happens much too often and can have life-threatening implications. And here to talk with us about this problem is Dr. Terry Parnell. Dr. Parnell is the principal and founder of Health Literacy Partners, and she's also an assistant professor of population health at the Hofstra North Shore LIJ School of Medicine and adjunct faculty at Adelphi University College of Nursing and Public Health. Terry, thank you so much for joining us on Health Styles today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Terry, the issue I've been talking about is often referred to as a matter of health literacy. And October, we're sort of getting a jump start because October is Health Literacy Month. So clearly, somebody thinks this is really important. What is health literacy?
So yes, Health Literacy Month is in October, and it's been celebrated, I'd say, or it's been it's an awareness of health literacy for about 10 or 11 years now. And health literacy really is the degree to which a person has the capacity to obtain, process, understand, and communicate about their basic health information and also the services that are needed to make appropriate health decisions so that they can take all of that information and make an appropriate health decision.
So are there estimates of how many people struggle with this?
Yes. You know, actually, the IOM has reported...
The IOM being the Institute of Medicine,
yes, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, has reported that close to 90 million people, which is, you know, nearly half of our adult population,
wow,
really lack the health literacy skills that are needed to understand and act on this health information. And really, a study that was done in 2003... the National Assessment of Adult Literacy, that showed that only 12% of American adults really had proficient health literacy skills, so skills that were, enough to be able to perform those complex health tasks that we ask our consumers, you know, to do when they leave that doctor's office.
So it's an awful lot of people who have problems with health literacy, so Why do so many people have problems with it? This is not just a matter of literacy.
No, it isn't. And I think it's the several, issues that come together. The healthcare system has become much more complex and will continue to do so. And the healthcare providers, as they're becoming educated, nurses, physicians, are taught a different language. And I often say to patients and community members that it's the same as if I were to go into a car dealer and I ask, or a car mechanic, I should say, and I ask, you know, them to look at my car and I explain that something is wrong. And they speak to me in a language that I don't understand. Mm-hmm. You know, and they may talk about parts of the car and I nod along, and I say, can you fix it? And, you know, then they all say yes, and then they tell me the cost, and I say, okay. And then I come home, and someone in my family will say, what was the matter with the car? And I cannot explain what was told to me because it's an unfamiliar language. So this happens in many industries. The importance with health literacy is that it's impacting upon major decisions and treatments about our health and wellness. I think that that's a big, big part of it. The other, the last, I'd say, several years, fortunately, it's now being looked at as a situation where we can educate the consumers of healthcare that come to us for care, that go to the doctors and the clinics and to see the nurses, and also we can educate the people providing the care, so the nurses and the physicians as well, because together we can really have a wonderful partnership and, you know, eliminate low health literacy or certainly lessen it.
So clearly one of the issues is that we are so filled with jargon in the health professions that we use language that other people don't understand. They don't know what it is. And even if you are very well educated, you're struggling to understand the language that a health professional may be using. So that's one situation. There also is the situation, if I'm correct, that we do have a literacy problem in this country, although I'm suspecting that it will be lessened with computers, that when you have kids on computers and reading at an early age on the computer, whether it's an iPad or some electronic device, that we may not have as much of a problem with literacy as we did in the past. But there also are people who have problems with dyslexia and other things, with reading materials. So are we talking at all about options for people to learn about their health and how to manage it, other than through written instructions or through being given verbal instructions?
Yes, so I think a very important point is that this is not, health literacy is just not a reading and writing problem or difficulty. It's much, much more complicated than that. And really, unfortunately, everybody is at risk. Even well-educated adults are at risk, again, because of that medical jargon and being in an unfamiliar situation. And populations that tend to have more risk with low health literacy are the less educated, so that would be your, you know, what you were referring to possibly, lower socioeconomic status, your racial and ethnic minorities, but also people who are managing chronic chronic management of disease, ongoing asthma and heart failure, and, you know, chronically ill adults, older adults, because of changes in their vision, changes in their hearing, mobility. Yeah. And also, with the changing of our demographic landscape that is going on, also persons who speak and understand a language other than English. So English is not their primary language. So all of these people are at risk, you know, for low health literacy. And it's fluid. So a person who is well educated may be in a situation that they have, you know, proficient health literacy skills. But yet the following week they can be in a different situation, and those skills in that context may not be proficient. So to complicate the matter a little bit more, it changes for each individual as well, depending upon the context that they're in. So, I think it's really a matter of educating everybody that it does exist, because sometimes we miss the signs. The healthcare providers might miss the signs. The consumers of healthcare feel some stigma or shame, and they feel uncomfortable speaking up or saying, I didn't understand that, or they don't want to say that they have difficulty reading the material that was provided. So there, you know, we have to come together, and there are things that we can do to enhance that, because people with low health literacy, it's known that there are poorer health outcomes, there's less use of preventative care and preventative services. There's less knowledge in general about their illness. There's higher healthcare costs and increased hospitalizations. So this is a very important issue that, you know, often is overlooked.
Let me just remind listeners that we're talking about health literacy with Dr. Terry Ann Parnell. She is a registered nurse and founder and principal of Health Literacy Partners, which I hope we'll talk a little bit about towards the end of the program, Terry. So I just want to point out that as a registered nurse, both of us are registered nurses, that we know that patients are sometimes labeled as non-compliant
yes.
when they do not do what the health professional has prescribed or told them to do. And yet, it's often not that the person didn't want to follow a regimen that could help them, but rather that they didn't understand what that regimen was, nor know how to take the steps to put it in place.
And that's often the case, and sometimes, like, we are very quick to judge. And, you know, a skill that I often encourage the healthcare providers to implement is something that we call teach back. And that would be, you know, asking the patient and the family member or whoever is there with that patient to explain back in their own words so that I would understand, I can understand. I could make sure that they understand what I said. So it's not a question and answer session, which yeah. would be not cohesive and not, you know, a partnership, but it would be something like saying, you know, Diane, I just explained a lot of new medications to you and a new diet that I would like you to follow for this next week. I know it's a lot of information. And I went over it, you know, rather quickly in this last 10 minutes. I would like to make sure that I was clear in how I explain this to you. Can you tell me how you will explain this to your sister when you go home today? Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that I was clear. The onus and the responsibility is on me as the provider mm-hmm. to make sure that I didn't use medical jargon, or if I did, I then defined it and explained what cholesterol meant or what that term meant, and that I use consistent words, because that's something else that we often do is, you know, we might use the word
heart for cardiac and
yeah,
cardiac
but,
for
or
heart.
We may say you have to go to the ambulatory, you know, clinic and then say walk-in clinic and then call it something else. So we, within the same sentence, we're using different words for the same message, which is very confusing.
So for listeners who find themselves being given information that they don't understand from mm-hmm. a provider, because not all providers are as sensitive to this as you are, where you're on this path and you have this commitment to try to raise the understanding of this issue among healthcare providers. But what can I as a patient or the listeners do when we're given information that we don't understand?
So first, I think that consumers and patients need to truly be involved in their health care. And I think that's important to state, because we often spend more time, you know, planning for that meeting at work or that vacation that we're going on or a holiday celebration than we do for going to a physician's appointment or, you know, going to prepare for surgery. So I do think we have to be, as consumers and patients, be involved in our care. So by preparing for that, that's a first start.
How do I prepare?
I think by thinking through the appointment that you're going to, jotting down questions that you have ahead of time, seeing if you can bring somebody with you to the visit, because it's always helpful to have another set of eyes and ears there with you, somebody that also can take notes while you're there is helpful. And I have this little acronym, and I think it's helpful. It's STAMP. So for the S, I think if a person needs to speak up if they have questions or concerns about their safety and about their treatment, they can initiate teach back if the provider doesn't. So if the person that's going over the treatment plan doesn't do teach back, the patient can say, just a second, I'd like to just be sure I heard you correctly, and then repeat back those words. So they don't have to wait for the nurse or the physician to do that. Mm-hmm. They should also ask for action steps. What action steps do you need me to take and why? Mm. And then M is always review medications. Always bring your medications with you. They call that sometimes a brown bag. Throw them in a bag and bring them, or you can write them down, because medication safety is a very important aspect of when it comes to health literacy, and ask for plain language. So if there is a lot of medical jargon or words that are not understood, you know, you can ask for plain language. And the other thing is to bring a pen and a pad with you, again, just to write down, you know, and jot down notes. In addition to that, if they want to go online and take a look, the National Patient Safety Foundation has many suggestions. And one of their initiatives is called Ask Me 3.
And those Ask Me 3?
Yes. And those are three questions that they feel every, you know, patient should ask their dentist, their doctor, their nurse. And the three questions are, number one is, what is my main problem? Number two would be, what do I need to do? So what do I need to do about this? And the third question is, why is it important? And that personalizes it. And that, you know, that's an important aspect of it. And that helps to bring up that conversation and that dialogue between patient and provider. So it's called Ask Me 3. And it's, what is my main problem? What do I need to do? And why is it important? And I think those are some helpful hints that,
yes,
that, you know, empower the patient and help them be, you know, an active partner in their care. They are the most important member of that healthcare team.
Mm-hmm. And So, Terry, let me just complicate this a bit.
Yes.
The reality is that when I go into that physician's office, maybe even mm-hmm. a nurse practitioner or a PA's office, mm-hmm. they are on the treadmill to see so many patients in a day. And I've already sensed that I've started, my appointment started late. My mm-hmm. provider seems very rushed. Mm-hmm. How do I manage this feeling that if I ask these questions, they don't want to take the time to answer?
I think that writing down, you know, two or three questions and having that, and then when that nurse, practitioner, or physician comes in to say, I know, you know, you're very busy. I just have two questions I need to ask before the visit is over today. You let them know up front.
Good.
I think that's a good start. And then I wouldn't, of course, because of that, it's that partnership. So, you know, we can't sit there and ask 6, 7, 8 questions mm-hmm. at every visit. But prioritize. What are the two or three questions that are very important at that time? And then if you don't get through them, ask who you can call mm-hmm. or where can I call mm-hmm. to follow up if I should have another question. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be very important also.
I also want to go back to what you said about medications. I mm-hmm. have a colleague who actually has been quite concerned about the extent to which people are taking medications prescribed by one healthcare provider, and then they might have a hospitalization, get new prescriptions, and they're still taking the old ones because nobody's ever done what we call medication reconciliation, mm-hmm. trying to look at all the medications and decide which ones to take now and which ones to stop. And she's identified people getting into huge problems because the providers aren't paying attention to the wide range of medications that not just they prescribed, but others have prescribed. So this brown paper bag idea, is that often started and recommended by the provider, or do you recommend that we as patients just do it?
I don't think many providers necessarily recommend that. They might recommend to bring in a list. You know, of medications. And, you know, again, that's more time-consuming for a patient to write all that down. So if that's difficult, I would just suggest putting them in a bag and bringing them and saying, yes, you know, these are the medications that I'm on. Also, by going to just one pharmacy, in my experience, I've come across patients who might use several pharmacies, which also can complicate the issue a little bit more. So that's helpful, too, you know, is to have all your medications filled at one pharmacy so that something alerts the pharmacist.
Yes.
That could be shared with you as well. But I encourage the patients to bring their medications or a list and just to say, you know, these are the medications that I'm on. Do I still take all of these?
You know, I really like that pharmacist. Use one pharmacy. recommendation. I think it's a really good one. I have to share that I was surprised recently when I went to a CVS pharmacy to get a prescription filled, and they said, well, you didn't fill it at the CVS. You filled it in another one. I said, but you're all CVS. Why can't you communicate? I'm hoping we'll get to the day when, indeed, it really is not just one store, but you can go to, if it's some chain of stores, that you can go to any of them and they see, because pharmacists will do that. They will say, you know what, you're already on this medication, and I'm concerned about the adverse reaction that you might have by adding this one. I'm going to call your physician.
Yes, they will. And,
yes.
You know, becoming, you know, familiar and get to know your local pharmacist is that's a wonderful asset and
yes.
a resource. And to complicate, it's not just about the medication per se, but also it's the scheduling. And I think we will get to that point that you mentioned, hopefully in our lifetime, you know.
Yes.
But I think the other area that they're working on is a universal schedule for medications because. You might have three medications, and one might say, you know, take them every 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
One might say take three times a day,
mm-hmm.
and one might say take with meals.
Mm-hmm.
So what does all that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean I can take all three of these at
mm-hmm.
the same time because
yeah.
they're all essentially three times a day?
Yeah.
You know, so it's those complicated conversations depending upon that medication that need to occur. For your safety, you know, for the patient's
safety.
So
we're close to running out of time here, but I wanted to just get in a little bit more discussion about people who have low vision. We know that macular degeneration and other eye problems are on the rise, and that particularly for older people, that this is an issue that they might have been fine in the past, but now they're really struggling to see. What do you advise people who are having vision problems to do when they're handed written materials? For example, it's required by law, at least in New York, that you have written discharge instructions from any time you go to an emergency room or a hospital. But I don't think there's much thought given to whether the person can read them.
Right. Well, it's the reading of them, and they should be in your preferred language as well. And that,
uh-huh.
you know, isn't necessary. You know, that's also another area that I think we have some opportunities. And I think, honestly, in that situation, if it's certainly an acute visit and it's someone that you don't know, the patient, you know, would need to say that I have some difficulty reading this, you know, because I have visual changes. Sometimes those information sheets can be printed in different font sizes, but they might
right.
just print it out in the regular, what they call the normal font size,
mm-hmm.
which is often a font size 12. But they don't know that you have difficulty reading it. So I think, or asking if they don't feel comfortable, you know, saying that because that might feel a little uncomfortable, to say, can you take a look at this with me and can we circle the three most important things that I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can take that information and as they're going over it, they're reading that with the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And then the patient can, like, jot down notes or the family member. But I, you know, I'm a big believer in speaking up.
Mm-hmm.
And if that material is not, if you're not getting it in a way that you can understand it, you need to speak up and say
yes.
that, you know, I have difficulty reading. Can this be printed in a larger font?
Great. Terry Parnell, these have been great tips today. I really appreciate your coming on to Health Styles today to talk about how to promote health literacy among all of us. I think we all struggle with it from time to time. So thank you for coming on to Health Styles today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Terry Ann Parnell is a principal and founder of Health Literacy Partners. And the website for that, Terry?
It's Health Literacy, www.healthliteracypartners.com.
Healthliteracypartners.com for information. More information on health literacy. Terry is a registered nurse, and she's also an assistant professor of population health at Hofstra North Shore Long Island LIJ School of Medicine. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in today. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy. at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Thanks for tuning in.